It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. 2 years ago this week, unarmed black teenager Antoine Rose was shot to death by an East Pittsburgh police officer. His killing prompted weeks of protest and calls for police reform. But state legislators are only now taking up the issue after nationwide protests following the police killing of George Floyd last month in Minneapolis. 90.5 WESA's Chris Potter talked with Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro and with Antoine's mother, Michelle Kenney, who spoke from Washington, D.C., where she was lobbying Congress.
Mr. Shapiro, I'd like to start with you. This week, a state House committee approved an amendment that would create a database of complaints against police officers that other departments can consult when they're in the middle of a hiring process. You've convened a group of police organizations and other folks to support that initiative. Why is this important?
It's critically important that we listen to all of our communities in Pennsylvania and understand what will make you be and feel safer. I think for so many people, it will help us feel safer if we have transparency in the hiring process, that we root out police officers who shouldn't be on the beat, and that we have people who are sworn to protect us, who have the skills, the training, and the background to do that job. This bill, this amendment that passed in the House this week, was born out of discussion with law enforcement leaders who had been saying to me, interestingly enough, a lot of the same things I heard from reform advocates, which is, we want change. And from that meeting, it became clear that there were some areas of agreement. And I think the most important area of agreement was around this idea of creating a database to allow for transparency in the hiring process. We've got to come together and do this now, not just in the wake of George Floyd or in the memory of Antoine Rose, but because this needs to be a down payment on the kind of progress we need to make in Pennsylvania when it comes to reform. It's because of people like Michelle and others who have been calling for this, the government is acting in response to their calls.
And Michelle, I think for a lot of us who've watched efforts to reform the police just founder and struggle to get off the ground, all of a sudden everything seems to be moving very quickly. Talk a bit about what it's like to see suddenly this groundswell of bipartisan activity around efforts to change the way policing happens in this country.
On the day Antoine was born, I worked at a local law enforcement office near my home. I was advocating for change on July 12, 2000, the day that Antoine was born. I never thought that Antoine would be part of or the face of the movement here in Pittsburgh. I could have never imagined that. But my fight has been long overdue. So for most people, it appears as though it's only 2 years, but the truth of the matter is I've had the same five issues for 20 years now. It's just ironic that at this point I can now have an impact when 20 years ago I felt like I was fighting a useless battle.
What is it like now to see all of that changing so quickly?
It's really strange because I actually left my place of employment because I felt like I couldn't make a change and that nothing was changing. And now to watch all of these organizations stand up, it's a little overwhelming at times. When you get a call from the Attorney General's office and you're just Antoine's mom, there's no way to describe it.
Josh, I'm curious, as somebody who knows the ways of Harrisburg, we have had these situations, not just with Antoine, where people have died at the hands of police under circumstances that have been murky, I think would be a charitable way of describing it. I mean, these were our own neighbors, people we knew who have died this way. And yet it seems as though in Harrisburg, that wasn't enough to move the ball in terms of actually creating some sort of reform. What is it about this moment that seems to be connecting with people and with legislators in particular that all of these other cases really haven't been able to? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I do. And I think it comes back to the community. And I think the reason why you're seeing action today is because the voices of the communities, these voices are being heard. These demonstrations aren't happening just in Philly and Pittsburgh. These demonstrations are happening in rural communities, suburban communities, all across Pennsylvania. And these lawmakers are finally recognizing that officers who engage in misconduct or use excessive force, they actually erode trust in law enforcement, and they make it harder for our communities to be and feel safe. That's not a Republican or Democratic issue, an urban or rural issue. That's an issue that we can all get behind. If lawmakers choose to ignore that, they do so at their own peril. Lawmakers need to listen to those voices in the community. And when they do, I am optimistic that they will get this reform passed and sent to the governor's desk. The governor's indicated that he would sign it.
Michelle, back to you. Your son was killed by an officer. It was the officer's first day on the job. He had previously worked for the University of Pittsburgh, left after he allegedly violated the rights of some students there. He is suing over that termination, trying to get his job back. But this is exactly the kind of situation that this legislation, that this reform is addressing here. So was this the first thing, the most important thing for you to see in terms of reform?
The database is critical. A lot of times when officers are hired, the agency that's hiring them has no background information. When you place a call and you ask them, was the officer fired? Of course they're going to tell you, well, he resigned because he's given the opportunity to resign before he's terminated. So by putting this database together, I think that it will weed out a lot of people who aren't really qualified to be police officers. I just don't think people understand how many officers are actually transferred to other departments with bad reputations that they take with them from their previous employment.
Michelle, this database, do you think it should be made available to the general public? Do you think that would be an improvement?
No, I don't. I know people are going to disagree with that. But again, Antoine is my son. I think this information should be made available to law enforcement only, and that information should be transferred over to their council or however the governing body of that community is set up. I would hope to believe that most of these jurisdictions, if they knew that an individual was a liability, that they would not proceed with the hiring process. But in the same breath, it should be confidential. We don't go to any other place of employment and say, give me your employee's background history. We have to get to the point that we have an understanding and there's some trust there. Right now, there is none. We're trying to develop that. I just don't think people understand that I'm actually an advocate for law enforcement. And if you're a good cop, you will this list will not affect you at all, other than the fact that you won't be put in a predicament that you end up working with a bad cop.
And Mr. Shapiro, please feel free to jump in here.
This type of database will save lives. Look, I mean, can we say, you know, definitively would have saved Antoine's life? I don't know that we could say that. But we certainly know that the officer who killed Michelle's son had a complaint history. And we're led to believe that his department had no idea about it.
Michelle, this obviously must be a really difficult time for you. This is the 2-year anniversary of your son's death. How should we be sort of thinking of and honoring his legacy this week, given everything that's going on?
You're right. This week itself has been a whirlwind. Between the initial call last week with myself and Attorney Josh Shapiro, the AG's office, and just being here in Washington, it has been a whirlwind. But what keeps me going and what I never want people to forget is that picture and all the pictures that you see of Antoine. You see that beautiful smile. And when people ask me what I miss the most, that is what I miss the most. Those pictures of him smiling tell you exactly who he was. So I don't have to shout from the rooftops anymore that my son didn't deserve to die, because I think the world knows that now.
Michelle Kenny, again, my condolences for your loss, and thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you.
Mr. Shapiro, thank you too for your time. Appreciate it, and hope you'll keep us apprised here as these efforts to reform policing continue in Harrisburg.
We will. Most importantly, thank you for letting Michelle's voice be heard far and wide. Thank you.
That was WESA's Chris Potter speaking with Attorney General Josh Shapiro and Michelle Kenny, the mother of Antoine Rose. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Tomorrow is Juneteenth, a celebration of the end of slavery. Although President Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation in January 1863, it was on June 19, 1865, that the military commander of Texas proclaimed enslaved people were now free. The date is acknowledged in different ways in states and cities across the country. Samuel Black is the director of African American programs at the Senator John Hines History Center. Samuel, what does Juneteenth mean for you?
It is a recognition and acknowledgement of the struggles of my ancestors here in America. It also means the overthrow of America's system of slavery. Juneteenth is in recognition of the jubilation that formerly enslaved people felt in Texas upon learning of their freedom. It also makes me reflect on the fact that during the Civil War, you had nearly 4 million people in this country who were enslaved. And for them to almost overnight be declared free really is a tremendous aspect and something that we're still dealing with today.
Does Juneteenth have added significance today, this year?
I think it has added significance in American society in general. I don't think it has an added significance in the African-American community, because if we can remember Juneteenth in 2018 and 2019, for instance, here in Pittsburgh, part of the parade in March was in recognition and support of Antoine Rose.
Yes.
I think that outside the black community, it's been recognized a lot more, and the significance is a lot more, especially for those people who are learning about Juneteenth for the very first time.
Juneteenth is noted in most states. Some celebrate it even as a state holiday. We're hearing about businesses designating Juneteenth as a paid holiday. What does that mean to you?
It sounds really good on paper. We have to be very careful about businesses and agencies and corporations doing things because it's the right thing to do at this moment. But is it really part of their long-range plans?
Supporters would like Juneteenth to be a national holiday. What do you think? Is that even possible? There was resistance to having a national holiday for Dr. King.
Nothing happens overnight, especially if it's something in the interest of African Americans. A lot of times decisions like this are made by politicians who feel the pressure to make the decision within their own interests. We hope that that's not done, but if it is, then once it's a holiday, then it will evolve even more. African Americans, as you know, have been celebrating Juneteenth since 1865. Whether it's a national holiday or not, it's not going to make any change within the approach that African-Americans have.
At the Hines History Center, there is the ongoing exhibit, From Slavery to Freedom. It highlights the history of the anti-slavery movement, the Underground Railroad, the impact of 19th century activism on the struggle for civil and human rights in Pittsburgh. Visitors start by walking through a shackle. Do you sort of wander around the exhibit when people are visiting and listen for their reactions? What do they tell you?
Most of the comments are appreciative of the History Center telling that story. There are comments about people learning things for the very first time, people unaware that slavery existed in western Pennsylvania and in Pittsburgh, people learning more about the abolitionist movement to end slavery among Pittsburghers. And so especially with today's crises, people are making direct connections between what took place before the Civil War and what's taking place now in terms of activism. And they're learning that some of the same dynamics of the 19th century are being used today. People are being vocal. People are marching in the streets, whether in protests or in commemoration and celebration of changes in the way that African Americans are treated in this country.
The exhibit also discusses today's hope for freedom and equality all these years later. The same challenges?
Pretty much so, and that's what we're seeing. You know, there are historians who have made connections between the way that police departments across the country operate is very similar to slave patrols of the 19th century. You know, your historic memory kicks in when these things happen and you recognize and realize some of the same attitudes toward African Americans. There has to be violence inflicted on African Americans in order to control them. It's one thing that I always ask myself, that unarmed black men can be shot and killed or kneeled on and suffocated and killed on the streets of America by police. But you have someone who can go into a church and murder 9 people and not receive the same fate. So a person who is a murderer will seem to have more rights than a person who hasn't committed a crime or isn't even in the act of a crime or wanted for a crime. So those are some of the things that pop up in my mind and that America needs to answer for, because it's part of the psychology of Americans who just can't understand why these things continue to happen. What is it about this country and the way that they look at African Americans to feel that they have to kill them on the spot?
And you're referring to a mass shooting that actually happened 5 years ago yesterday. A white supremacist by the name of Dylan Roof killed 9 African Americans during a Bible study at a church in Charleston, South Carolina. Roof has since been convicted and sentenced to death. Samuel, final question. Slavery was abolished more than 150 years ago. What do we still not get about the lingering effects, the lingering impact of slavery?
I think what we still haven't gotten is the humanity in the whole thing. In the 19th century, it was a question of humanity. And today is still a question of humanity. If you listen to the rhetoric of some elected officials around the country, I mean, those who are what I call against humanity, because it's a human issue, whether you're going to respect someone regardless of their race, regardless of their sexual orientation, regardless of their religion, respect their humanity or not. And it's one of the struggles we have in this country. Are we going to live up to our creed as a nation, or are we going to destroy ourselves? Each one of us as an individual is charged with upholding the rights of humanity first. And if we can do that, I think there'll be tremendous change in our society.
Samuel Black is the director of the African American Program at the Hines History Center. Thanks, Samuel.
Thank you.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Joya Zenkovich, and Doug Shugerts. Until next time, I'm Kevin Gavin. Hope you have a good day of good news.